From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds. At age 6, nearly half of U.S. girls start expressing concerns about their weight. And in their lifetime, 20 million of these girls and 10 million men are going to suffer from a clinically significant eating disorder. Some of those cases will be fatal. And despite these dangers, some people actively promote eating disorders. There are websites encouraging bulimia and anorexia, how-to sites. There are Twitter feeds with hashtags like Thinspiration and Pro-Anna and Pro-Lima. Dr. Jillian Lampert says this kind of eating disorder rhetoric isn't limited to the internet. It's part of advertising everywhere. Dr. Lampert is senior director at the Seattle Treatment Center called the EMILY Program. She's got a doctorate in nutrition and epidemiology. She's on the board of the Academy of Eating Disorders. It's an international professional organization of clinicians and researchers. Jillian joins us today from the studios of Spokane Public Radio. Thank you so much for taking the time.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
What defines a eating disorder, Dr. Lampert?
Well, the diagnostic criteria are changing a bit right as we speak. The American Psychiatric Association is releasing new criteria this week. But currently, there are three major eating disorders: anorexia, bulimia, and then this catch-all category currently called eating disorder not otherwise specified. And when people think about eating disorders, they often have an image that comes to mind that would represent anorexia, a very underweight, probably female, probably younger person. And in reality, we know that that's only about 10% of the people that struggle with eating disorders. The majority of people who struggle with an eating disorder, you can't tell by looking at them. So it's an interesting piece of information. And the anorexia comes with it, the weight loss, the severe food restriction, the dieting, the significant weight loss that we think of, while bulimia brings with it overeating, binge eating, and then some sort of compensatory mechanism like self-induced vomiting or use of diet pills or diuretics or excessive exercise. While the third category may be similar to anorexia or bulimia, or maybe binge eating disorder-like behaviors, which are overeating without the compensatory behaviors. So eating disorders are more complex than people realize.
Is there a clear line between someone who's got a problem with their diet versus it tipping over to a disorder? Does it have to affect your life in a certain negative way to become a disorder?
It does. There's in the diagnostic criteria, there's lists of how frequently behaviors need to happen and how clinically significant they are in terms of impacting your functioning. Although there are a lot of people who are very close to that line, and there's a lot of sentiment of, well, I'm not quite sick enough, or how does this fit into the societal general concern about eating and weight? So it gets to be a bit of a gray area.
I've been surprised to hear over the last recent years, maybe you've been aware about this for longer, but there are like pro-eating disorder rhetoric that exists
right
on websites and in Twitter feeds, pro-anorexia, pro-bulimia. What kind of content shows up on these websites and with these Twitter accounts?
Well, the content is shocking. The content is a lot of dieting tips. It's a lot of tips on how to use these eating disorder behaviors like vomiting or diet pills or laxatives or diuretics or exercise. There's a lot of visual images on the internet sites that show very thin, typically women, and also thin or muscular males. They're really promoting the societal idea. The content is shocking, like I said, although it's interesting in that it's really only a more extreme version of what you see driving down the highway, opening up a web page, opening up a magazine, because our society is really quite influenced by really widespread images of what's attractive and what constitutes beauty and attractiveness.
And I want to get to those advertising images in a moment, but these sites are seem to actively be encouraging folks to have anorexia with tactics and strategies and techniques to do it. And I can't think of encouraging other types of unhealthy behavior. Maybe I don't know of others, but why do you think there are pro-eating disorder activists? Why don't they recognize this as a potential problem?
Yeah, I think that there, well, I think a lot of people, you know, think it's a problem. I think even some of the people who visit the sites realize that maybe they're struggling with a problem, but the allure of the illness is such that it draws them into to connecting with people that have the illness and creates a sense of community. So people tell us, clients who visit the sites tell us that they understand on some level that it's not a helpful place for them to spend time, yet they're in a place where people understand the behaviors that they have, and then they can share those behaviors, they learn different behaviors. So in some cases, it's really seeking a place of support more than seeking a place of learning new information.
You said
it's a really interesting dynamic.
You said the allure of the illness. I can't quite imagine the allure of heart disease, the allure of cancer, the allure of schizophrenia. Why is there an allure to this?
Well, I think there's an allure because of the belief that we you know, again, these are extreme versions of normal thoughts. So our society is so supportive of people who can manage their weight, exercise frequently, do all the right health behaviors, and eating disorders are an extreme version of that. So the allure is in part where I'm meeting what society's asking of me, so I'm doing it better than anybody else. Isn't that laudable? That's one piece of it. And the illness is such that when it's a biologically based brain illness, and when we start to restrict our food intake and change the way we're eating and change what we're doing with our food and activity, our brains change. And so it's not as though people are thinking, you know, clearly as we would anticipate, and they're going to go to these websites and see them and think, oh, I shouldn't do this. They're already having these different changes in their thoughts and their behaviors, and the websites are reinforcing the behaviors they have.
You can actually see that in a brain scan. You can see someone's brain change when they're anorexic, when they're bulimic, and that this change in their brain encourages the behavior to continue?
Absolutely. You can see that in functional MRIs. You can see different parts of the brain light up. It's similar to the center of the brain that lights up in pleasure, in addiction, in reward. And we believe that as eating disorders go on, those centers of the brain are changing because of the changes with the diet and the food intake and the activity. So it really is, it's the interesting thing I think about these sites is that people think, oh, people are choosing to have an eating disorder, so they're choosing to go onto these sites and they're choosing to engage in this behavior. They certainly are choosing to go on these sites, and in some level they're choosing to engage in some of the behaviors, but it's being reinforced by the illness itself, that eating disorders are a mental illness, not just a choice or a trend or a fad.
Jillian Lambert is with us, Senior Director at the Seattle Treatment Center, the Emily Project. She has a doctorate in nutrition and epidemiology. We're talking about eating disorders. Maybe you have a story to share or a question to ask. We're at 206-543-5869. That's 206-543-KUOW. It's 800-289-5869. You can write to us, conversation@kuow.org. Recently, Abercrombie and Fitch came under fire for their marketing techniques that include carrying only sizes 10 and below for women. ABC News had this report.
A spokesperson for Abercrombie and Fitch declined to comment, but in a 2006 interview, CEO Jeffries told Salon magazine, "We go after the attractive all-American kid. A lot of people don't belong in our clothes, and they can't belong. Are we exclusionary?" Absolutely.
Dr. Lambert, are these types of clothing store policies and advertisements encouraging eating disorders?
Well, I think they're certainly encouraging a strong sense of body dissatisfaction and a strong drive to change our bodies. I want to make it clear that I don't think, you know, Abercrombie or any particular clothing store is causing an eating disorder. And at the same time, that the fundamental message in all of those advertisements, in the, you know, the fact that Abercrombie's store photos often don't have clothes on the model is interesting for a clothing store. So the messages that they're sending are definitely supporting this environmental push to have us change our bodies. And so it also, with it, the promise is once you change your body, then all these other things will happen to you. So an example in Abercrombie's comments, you'll be cool, right? If you fit into the clothes, you'll be cool. Isn't that great? Your life will be fantastic. So that's what contributes to this dis-ease, if you will, with our bodies, and lead people to change the way they eat, to get hooked into these over excessive exercise and dietary patterns. And for those people who have vulnerabilities, in essence, the vulnerabilities in their brain that could lead them down that path in a different way than somebody who doesn't.
But there are, of course, lots of clothing stores that are trying to make people feel a certain way at something, and they're selling larger sizes also. Why would some of these brands have that kind of hold or influence over people who might have a tendency toward an eating disorder? Why wouldn't they just pay attention to other stores that are trying to tell them that if you buy their clothes, you'll be cool?
Right. Well, it has the exclusive nature, though. That's really what the Abercrombie statement is saying, is that it's exclusive and you can only the best people, only the most exclusive people can fit into these clothes and fit into this store. And the other piece that goes along with eating disorders, often from a temperament issue, is a sense of perfectionism or a drive to achieve. And when you think about it, perfectionism, a drive to achieve, the ability to stick to something without giving up, those are all great temperament traits if used in the right way, if used for positive things. If used for sort of hijacked by an eating disorder, then they get out of control and very dangerous. So people's temperaments, you know, there are some people who are more perfectionist and slightly anxious and overachieving, and, you know, I might be one of them. Mm-hmm. And I use it to get an advanced degree versus to have that hijacked by an eating disorder. So it's certainly the exclusivity and the drive to achieve that gets captured by these images.
Dr. Jillian Lampert is with us. So let's turn the conversation to Claire Brady. She's a healthy living blogger at fittingitallin.com. A little over 5 years ago, she was struggling with anorexia. Claire, does Dr. Lampert's explanation that a lot of times this is just a striving for perfection, was that part of the drive that led you to anorexia? Claire Brady, are you with
us? I have a perfectionist personality. I definitely sort of fit in with that perfectionist, anxious, always wanting to be better role. You know, my mother can say that about me since I was a very small child. With regards to schoolwork and things. And for me, it was a lot about a sense of control and having that be perfect over my eating and my body. It was really a lot about the control for me. It's a different sort of trigger or a different reason for a lot of people. But the perfectionist definitely is that personality trait that brought it out in me and sort of hijacked it for me.
How did anorexia affect your life, Claire?
It had a very negative impact, obviously. I was about 17 through 21, so the end of high school and the beginning of college, and it really caused a lot of disconnect with my friends and my family. I didn't want to be social. I wasn't the same person. I was anxious around food, and I didn't get to have a lot of those same joys and experiences that my friends were having because of the disease. And I feel in some ways like it took a lot of that period of my life and what's supposed to be a really fun, happy period of your life away from me.
Now, I've read that oftentimes there's a shame involved in it and a covering up of the behavior. Did you experience that?
Definitely. You know, I did definitely want to cover it up because I knew that it wasn't normal or something that people would be okay with. So there were lots of excuses, lots of shame. And I think also eating disorders are lots of times seen as a disorder of vanity, which some ways they are, and sometimes they start that way. But they are a psychological disease, and they aren't seen the same way a different disease would. People would never be ashamed of having cancer, but there's
right.
a lot of shame involved with eating disorders because it's seen as a lifestyle choice. And that's what's so harmful, is that these girls that actually are choosing it as a lifestyle choice is very terrible. They don't understand that the vast psychological effects and health effects that it can have on them.
How did you come out of it, Claire, at age 21? Did someone have to intervene? Was it a realization you had on your own? Did it take a long time to disengage from it?
So I actually started getting treatment for it actually when I was still in high school at 17 or 18. I started seeing a doctor and a nutritionist. It was a long process for me. So I started with meal plans and was gaining weight, but it was the psychological part that was the hardest to overcome, that anxiety around food that didn't really allow me to lead a normal lifestyle. And eventually it was actually medication for me that I think played the biggest role, was anti-anxiety medication that allowed me to just sort of loosen up and start to live like a normal college kid again.
Yeah.
But it was definitely lots of therapy, nutritionists. It's usually a big team effort between doctors, therapists, and nutritionists for recovery.
Claire Brady, thank you so much for talking to us today. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
You can read her at fittingitallin.com. Dr. Jillian Lampert with the Emily Program Treatment Center is with us. A final question for you, Dr. Lampert. Once someone recognizes it's a problem, what's the success rate in getting people cured of anorexia or bulimia?
Well, the statistics vary, but we're really quite confident that with good treatment, at least 50 to 75% of people recover and go on to lead really full, rich, vibrant lives. Sort of, you know, using Claire as that example, that you have to get through the whole set of pieces that are going along with the illness, the medical, the nutrition, the psychological. And really, we find that people in recovery live a little bit countercultural because they can look at that Abercrombie ad or that ad in whatever store you want to pick, and they can say, you know what, I know what they're trying to sell me, and I am not going to buy it. I'm going to do what I need to do to be healthy and be me, and who I am is far more than what my body is. Who I am is the person inside.
How often does it take the use of anti-anxiety drugs like Claire had to use to help her get through this?
You know, it's really different. That can be a common experience. Some people use medications for a time. Some people use them for a longer time. And it's really, I liked her point about it being incorporated in a multidisciplinary team, that for each person, it is a unique set of circumstances that have some common themes across all people with eating disorders. So people really need to work with their physician and their nutritionist and their therapist to figure out what's the right combination for them.
We've been talking about eating disorders with Dr. Jillian Lampert, Senior Director at the Seattle Treatment Center, the EMILY program. She's got a doctorate in nutrition and epidemiology, and she is on the board of the Academy for Eating Disorders. Thank you so much for your time, Dr. Lampert.
Thanks for having me.
You're listening to KUOW 94.9 Seattle. I'm Ross Reynolds.